Good morning. Welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we are focusing on the 19th perek of Sefer Melachim Aleph. So the 19th chapter is following the whole episode of Har Carmel. At this point in time, what we would be expecting is a complete spiritual revolution. Everybody's going to turn around. There's going to be a complete change of society. That's what we're expecting to follow next. And what happens is really an anticlimax. What ends up happening is that Ahav comes home. Remember, Eliyahu has escorted him. And Ahav says, honey, and comes to Ezebel, well, you're never going to guess what Eliyahu did today. And she said, well, what? And she says, well, he killed all the prophets of Baal. So Ezebel, instead of becoming aware of God's power in this, she sends a letter out to Eliyahu and she says, at this time tomorrow, I'm going to kill you. Ezebel is not shaped by this experience whatsoever. And Eliyahu flees from her. He has to run and goes to Be'er Sheva in the Negev, which is the southmost border of Israel at this point in time, and he leaves his Nair, his servant, there, and off he goes. He runs off to himself, and he goes to sleep underneath a rotem bush. Interestingly enough, just as a parenthetical note, the rotem bush is actually the juniper bush, which is to be found if anybody goes to the Mizpeh Ramon or to the Eilat area in the desert there, you can find it. The rotem has an interesting property that its roots are long-lasting when it comes to burning. When you use them as fuel, Gachalei Resamim, as it says in Tehillim, Kuf Chaf, is something which lasts for a long time. There's this long sense of fire or of fuel which cannot be put out, thinking about what relevance of that is to the story. So Eliyahu is sleeping under this bush, and an angel wakes him up and says, Eliyahu, you need to eat. He presents him with a little bit of water, a little bit of something to eat, and that's what he does. So Eliyahu drinks and eats a little bit. And the angel then says, you need to eat a little more because you're going to be going for the next 40 days and nights to Har HaElokim. It's a long journey, which is in Horeb, which is in the Sinai Peninsula, so he's going back to Har Sinai. Okay? So Eliyahu does, and off he goes. 40 days, 40 nights, he gets there to Horeb. As he arrives there, he stays there, and Hashem says, Malacha po Eliyahu. Eliyahu, what are you doing here? God is asking, and not just what are you doing, but Hashem is obviously asking Eliyahu, what is your contention? What are you thinking right now? And Eliyahu says very firmly, Kanoi kinesi l'Hashem Elokei Tzevaot. I was zealous in your name, God. I rectify what was wrong in this world. They destroyed your altars. They killed your prophets. And I was the only one to fight this. And still they want to kill me. So you can see this sense the immense disappointment and frustration that Eliyahu is experiencing at this moment. So Hashem turns to him and he says, Eliyahu, come stand over here in the Har Hashem. And Hashem presents a huge wind, a gale which can break rocks. And then Hashem says, Lo baruch Hashem. Hashem's not found in the powerful winds. Then he presented some sort of earthquake, a rash. And then Hashem says, Lo barash Hashem. And finally, there's this all-consuming fire. And Hashem says, Lo ba'esh Hashem. Hashem's not in fire either. And finally, there's this thin, silent little noise. A very, very high-frequency noise, it sounds like. And Hashem says, in the cold of Mamadakah, Eliyahu hid his face in his cloak when he hears this. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu explains to him, that he is to be found not in the overt things, but in the quieter things. And then Hashem asks him one more time, Eliyahu, Malachopa, what are you doing here? And Eliyahu, word for word, repeats the same thing he said before. Kanoi kinesi l'Hashem Elokei Tzevaot, ki azu b'rischa v'esi b'nei Yisrael, es mizbuchoi horasu v'es nivecha haru b'charvoi v'osar eni levadi, v'akshon es nafshi l'chakto. I tried to do what was right for you, I was the only person that killed your prophets, they destroyed your mizbech, and I was the only one, and they tried to kill me because of it. Eliyahu says the exact word for word, letter for letter, he says the same response. What is going on over here? And then finally, what ends up happening is Hashem says to Eliyahu, okay, Eliyahu, time to go. You're going to go now and you're going to go to the Midbar of Damascus, to go up north to Damascus, the very opposite area. You're going to anoint a new king, Hazael, who's going to be the king of Aram. You're going to anoint a new king over Israel, whose name is Yehu ben Nimshi. And you're going to find a prophet who's going to take your place, whose name is Elisha ben Shaphat. You're going to find him as your new prophet. And I'm going to destroy Israel, leaving only 7,000 of them alive, because those are the only ones who did not bow down to Baal. Interesting. So then off he goes and finds Elisha. Elisha in the meantime is plowing with 12 oxen, and Eliyahu comes over to him and places his cloak on Elisha, which is obviously a sign of nomination, a sign of giving him this opportunity. Elisha asks to speak to his parents, tells his parents, and he leaves with Eliyahu. This is the end of the perek. Very strange perek on so many different fronts. I'd like to work with you just one idea that will perhaps pull it together a little bit, but there's much more to be said about this perek. And that is really, most of this thesis is to be found in the Alshich, in his writings on this perek. So here's just a few questions to think about. Number one is, why was Izebel waiting for the next day? Meaning to say, if Izebel wanted to kill Eliyahu, send out a party right now and kill him. Why does she have to wait? Some of the Farshim say it's an expression of her power. She wants to show him how she's not even scared of him. She can kill him whenever he wants, or whenever she wants. But nonetheless, why is she waiting this full day? Number two, why was Eliyahu going to Har Sinai? What's the point of going to Har Sinai? Number three, what was the lesson Hashem was trying to teach him, right? What was Hashem trying to show him in those three things, in the fire, in the wind, in the earthquake? What was Hashem trying to teach him? And what was Eliyahu not learning by repeating the same statement in that conversation? The whole thing seems a little strange. So Alshech HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a few points, and these are really, really worthwhile points to think about. Number one is that he quotes the famous Chazal, which says that Pinchas hu Eliyahu. That Pinchas, in fact, is Eliyahu, which is why it might explain why Eliyahu has no real family lineage right here. He just sort of starts the conversation with Achav in Perek Yud Ches, as we did yesterday. So he doesn't come from anywhere because he's already around. He's this person who has longevity like Pinchas, who is a bris shalom against death. Okay, this explains something else. You know, Pinchas had the ability of becoming invisible as well. We see that because when he and Kalev were spies in Jericho, it says that Rachav, when hiding them, only hid one of them. And the Mefarshim point out, quoting Chazal, that Pinchas did not need to be hidden because he was able to sort of shift the pin of his existence away from the physical to the spiritual, to the point that he no longer had corporeal, visible existence. Similarly, that's why Eliyahu could not be killed this day, why Ezebel had to wait for tomorrow, because Eliyahu had become invisible. He was so inclined towards the spiritual part of his persona that he was not visible at this point in time. Worthwhile thinking why. Let's go a little further. Then he goes to Har Sinai. Of course, for those of you with a careful sense of the text, you'll notice that the parallels to Har Sinai are unbelievably canny in terms of the connection between what he is doing and what Moshe Rabbeinu did those years back. First of all, the 40 days and 40 nights without food, that's clearly the Moshe Rabbeinu parallel. The revelation in the cave, Moshe Rabbeinu was in the Nikras Hatzorah when he saw Hashem's reality from the back. Similarly, Eliyahu was in this cave over here. Both Eliyahu has to cover his face when Hashem passes and Moshe Rabbeinu has to be covered. There's also this veil like that Moshe Rabbeinu has when he comes down. Eliyahu has this aderis which he puts on Elisha. There's a lot of parallels to this whole experience. In a certain sense, he's coming the closest as a human being has come, as Moshe has come, to seeing God himself. So now let's take this a little further. At the same time, as much as he's shifting his inner personality towards the spiritual existence, not the physical existence, at the same time, he's reminded by the angel, you still need to eat before you go these 40 days. Meaning to say, you still have some sort of physical reality, and you're not able to fully remove yourself from the constraints of this world. And I think this really explains what it is and why it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing Eliyahu in this lesson. He's saying to Eliyahu, you see the truth because you're so clearly aware of the spiritual truth in this world. You're demanding that of these poor, imperfect human beings around you. And you know what? The truth of the matter is that Hashem is not found in those expressions of power and justice. Not in the fires, not in the earthquakes, not in the great gales. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is found in subtlety. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is found within the imperfection and the quietness of this world. In a certain sense, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to him is, Eliyahu, you're right, but being right is not right in this case. And what was Eliyahu's response? Eliyahu's response was the exact same words. Kanoi kinesi, but Hashem, it's not right what they're doing. And Hashem says, you're not right, Eliyahu. Maybe you are not shayach. Maybe you do not belong in the brackets of this world, if that's the way you look at the imperfect human beings around you. So you know what? You're going to actually appoint new leaders. You're going to appoint a new leader of the king in the north, a new king in Aram, and you're going to have a new prophet to succeed you because you clearly are not part of the constraints of this world, which explains something which is going to be going to see later on, which is why Eliyahu disappears from this world. He isn't killed. He never dies. He goes up to heaven. His reality is so spiritual, his reality is so otherworldly that he can't simply exist within the constraints of this world. Well, then that's why he goes up to heaven. It is interesting to note, and to close with this, that the Medrash in Shir HaShem Rabbah, as quoting also a Zohar, which is to be found in Bereshis Lech Lecha, points out that when Eliyahu went up to heaven, in this perek, he clearly is criticizing B'nai Yisrael. He does not feel B'nai Yisrael on the correct level. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, you know what? I'm going to make you return. You're going to return to two important points in the year. Number one, you're going to return to every bris milah. You say that the Bnei Yisrael are not worthy. Well, I'm going to show you through all situations in the graveyards of Russia. I'm going to show you that Bnei Yisrael, against their own, at the threat of their own lives, are going to do bris milah. They're going to still stick with me throughout the generations. And you're going to be there to testify and to see that Bnei Yisrael, as imperfect as they are still willing to give their lives for me. And secondly, you're going to appear at the Seder, the national connection to Bnei Edah or Bnei Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because you distrusted their ability and their connection. Well, I'm going to show you. You're going to testify to that. And this is the end of this perek. It's the clashing between the ideals and the truth and the imperfection of what we see around us. And I think for ourselves, when we look at the reality around us, we look at the imperfection of the people around us and within ourselves, having that balance of being able to understand, yes, we're human. Yes, they're human. At the same time, also aspiring to always rectify ourselves, always get towards the next step, with the same time, the benefit of the doubt. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.